You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra Siam, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustaoch. Hello, hello. This is CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club with Isia and Daniel and a special guest. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Dora.
The Dora Duber.
CITR.
That was my trumpet.
That was good. That was really good.
CITR. I was in band in junior high.
What did you play, trombone?
I played the baritone. It's like the, I mean, I'm sure you know what that is, but most people don't. It's like the miniature tuba.
Cool.
Yeah.
Niche choice.
Tuba was too heavy.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But yeah, you're listening to Fan Club. This is our weekly show where we talk about movies and pop culture and music and basically whatever we want.
Yes.
And this week we're going to be talking about vampires, one of the most popular and legendary monsters, I would say.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, Daniel and I vowed to do a weekly Succession recap, and it premiered this Sunday. What did you think?
Yeah, as a Succession soldier, I was very excited to see the premiere. It was really great to spend time with the Roy family. We were talking a little bit about it before we started, but I felt like it had a bit of a slower start than I was expecting. I feel like with how last season ended, spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it, Tom kind of betrays his wife Shiv and kind of like goes on to Logan's side. And honestly, I don't remember all the businessy stuff that happened, but essentially there's a big betrayal. And I thought it was going to be like kind of like starting with a bang, kind of like season three did. But this one was a more like slow, dust has settled. But I still really liked it. What did you think, Isia?
I thought it was cool. I like that it started off with the siblings trying to figure out their new business venture.
The 100.
Yes, and I feel very bad for Roman Roy because all he wants to do is start his own little mini business that will still probably make millions of dollars. But his siblings are all hell-bent on getting back on their
getting back at their dad.
So that's
silly.
Oh,
like revenge.
Yeah. They're all okay, like, word. He's like, are you guys sure this isn't like to get back a dad? And they're like, no, it's just a good business move. I'm like, are you kidding me?
But it isn't. And it was really weird that, well, I guess not weird, but it was like interesting that Roman seemed like the most level-headed, like business-minded. When I feel like if you look back at season one, he knew like maybe the least, or he was the least like professional.
Well, he's just a coward and he is scared of his dad. So he can never, like, as soon as his dad's in the picture, to be like, don't do it, son. He won't do it because he's scared of him.
Yeah.
While the other siblings are kind of more like,
let's do it.
Let's get him back. And when Logan Roy said, get your own idea. When
morons.
He found out there were, morons. I'm like, he's so right. I'd be so pissed if all my kids did was try to steal my business. I'd be like, just do it. I bestowed upon you millions of dollars in inheritance. You could do anything. And you're here trying to get my business.
What did you think of his very existential chat with his bodyguard at dinner, Logan's?
He's probably just like, wow, all my kids hate me.
Yeah, I was like, are you suicidal, King? Like,
he's so old, he's gonna die.
Yeah. I don't know. He was. Any, like, big, like, quotable moments for you or, like, fun stuff that you really... Successionisms?
The Disgusting Brothers.
Yeah,
that was my favorite
so
slogan
silly.
From the show.
I love it. We should call ourselves that. The Disgusting Siblings.
The Disgusting Siblings.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same ring to it.
That's
as
true.
Brothers. We can all be brothers in essence, you know?
Yeah.
What else did I think? I think it was a really good episode. It made me laugh a lot, mainly Greg and anything Kendall says ever, because he does not speak like a real person.
We have the ethos of a nonprofit, but a path to crazy margins is the quote I wrote down. And he also said something about like info candy or something stupid like that for like the 100. Just weird business jargon.
Yeah.
The time.
He'd just be making stuff up.
Yeah.
And he called Shiv a yummy mummy demi. Something like that. Or yummy. Something along those lines.
Why?
Because she's always like, I'm liberal, but also I'm a billionaire or want to be a billionaire. Which is I think, very fair of him because she does think she's better than everyone.
Yeah.
Because she is like, I have better politics, but she's just as bad as the rest of them.
She's like the rich, like, centrist whisperer on the show.
Yeah.
She's whenever, a yummy mummy dummy.
Yeah. Yes. Whenever they have to talk to a woman, they, like, send her. Or, yeah. like, anyone who isn't, like, they an send old her white out. Man. They're yeah. like, you do it, you do
they
it.
They deploy her yeah. out. And they do in that episode. Successfully.
Successfully. True. Yeah. True, true, true. But, yeah, that's our Succession recap of the week.
Before we end, what do you think is going to happen like next week? Any predictions?
I think that they're going to have to flop because they always flop yeah. in this acquisition.
If there's any sort of win or development, there's always like five tumbles backwards soon yes. after.
I think something bad's going to happen to Greg because he's so dumb.
He's very unintelligent.
Like the yeah. fact that he's in these big business meetings, I'm like, why is he in the inner yeah. circle? I hope they bring Marcia back because she's a queen.
I miss her. Who do you think came out on top like this episode?
I mean, the siblings, they managed to rattle Logan, but I think Tom came out on top, even though he was very sad. He's finally free of Shiv.
Yeah.
She's an awful woman.
For now.
So I hope their divorce is for real.
We'll see.
Because he deserves that.
And yeah. he's Team Logan right now?
Yeah, but okay. he's so nice. Like, he gave Shiv a tip about what's going on so they could, like, sneak in and mess up the plans.
Mm. But nice is also, like, no, a relative awful. Term in the show. Like, he's still yeah. a terrible person.
He's an awful person, but yeah. I think I saw this thing that was, like, the only genuine, like, relationship in the whole show truly is, like, Tom's love for Shiv. As, like, awful as the relationship is, he, like, really, really loves her.
Yeah.
And there's, like, I don't think there's any other, like, feelings like that in the show between any characters. Like, he, even though he like messed up the relationship to get ahead business wise he's still like, but I love you. Whereas I don't think she ever really liked him. She's no. just like, oh, I want my submissive husband.
Yes, she did definitely want a submissive husband. I am interested to see if Tom kind of like resists the divorce, because so much of the, even though I think he does love Shiv, I feel like so much of the benefit he gets from being with Shiv is that like into the Roy family.
True.
So I wonder if he's going to try and, like, lean on Logan more now that the Shiv thing mm-hmm. may not be a sure thing. Or he's going to try and, like, win Shiv back somehow. Either way, it'll end with him being, I feel like, a wimpy boy in some form.
He is a wimpy boy.
Yeah.
Who initiated the divorce?
Well, he basically snitched on the siblings had a plan to usurp Logan. And he snitched on them.
Good use of usurp.
Thank you.
I'm going to write that down.
He snitched on them, got on Logan's, like, big good side, and that was kind of the... Then they just stopped talking because she's like, wow, you messed me up. And then he was like, I had dinner with Naomi, and she took that as, oh, so you're, like, showing off that you're dating someone else. But what he's yeah. really doing is giving her a tip about the business acquisition that's about to happen, which is very useful information to her. But all she got from that was, oh, he exists outside of... Us. Me and like other women. I don't know. Shiv yeah. just wants a little pup. Like,
she's a little dumb.
She wants to control someone, and the like notion that Tom could like date like breaks her brain so hard, because she's like, only I do that. Only I cheat on my husband and suggest we have an open marriage on the night of our wedding.
Yeah.
And do all these shenanigans. Only I do that. But he, how dare he?
Yeah.
You know?
Word.
Which is whack.
I wonder what their prenup is like.
Oh.
Probably airtight. Lot, right?
Yeah.
No. She. Yeah. There's no way he's walking like away. He ain't getting that.
Yeah.
Condo.
There's gotta be a prenup. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I think early that was a part of the show where he's like, "You do whatever you want."
Yeah.
On the prenup. Because
season one, he was very much like submissive and breedable.
Yeah.
He and then super he just recently started like growing a bit more of a spine.
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Those were our Succession thoughts. I feel like there needs to be like a S like. Word for thought that goes with Succession.
Succession's I don't know.
He's we'll figure
happening.
It out
over
a break. Yeah. But yeah, that's gonna be every week while Succession goes on.
Are you gonna do like a final Succession episode when it ends?
I think so. I don't even know when it ends. Hopefully if we're both around, then
yeah,
that would be
Daniel
great.
May leave.
We'll see. Everyone I think I'll, needs. Even if I'm gone, okay, our Succession speculations, we could call it.
Succession speculations.
Yeah, our Succession speculations.
I don't know if I can say that without messing up, but it's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Screamy.
Succession scrutinies. Yeah, that could be a good thing.
Studies.
Lots of good choices.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Roy family, they're bloodsuckers on news and information and democracy. You know, they get their life from sucking the life out of important institutions and making money off of it. Just kind of like vampires do, minus the money part. They do.
Yeah.
That was a great segue. I was trying so hard.
That was a really good segue. Really good. Yeah.
Extraction.
It was great.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, this this topic idea was brought to us by Dora Duber. And
what was it? Duber? I'm sorry. I've been saying Dubber.
Everyone says Dubber.
Oh, my bad. Duber.
It's German. Duba.
Oh.
It's German.
It's German.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. But yeah, why vampires? Why?
Thank you so much.
Are they so appealing to you?
I'm like obsessed with vampires in media. I've like always been obsessed with vampires in media, especially when I was a student and I was like, oh my God, Twilight is the biggest thing in the world. Like,
is that the catalyst?
Yeah. Because it was like sexy vampires.
True.
And then I was like, what does this mean? Like I started going to school and I was like, I need to figure out like why everyone was obsessed with this. It is so weird and like such a phenomenon. And what I love about vampires is like they are phenomenons. Like they are like especially vampires in media, like they take off. People get obsessed and like huge groups of people get obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And like why? That's so weird. There's no other monster that like really does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like any other monster that does, it's like tangential to vampires. Like werewolves wouldn't really be a thing unless vampires were like seen as their enemy. You know what I mean?
This is true. Yeah, it's usually like there's a lot of media around monsters that people are obsessed with, but it's never really the monster
totally
itself, you know? Like people in The Walking Dead or obsessed with The Walking Dead aren't like, I love zombies
because
they're like nameless and faceless, you know?
Do you think it's because vampires are like the sexiest, most provocative monster?
Definitely has a lot to do with it. They haven't always been sexy.
I think it's also because they're the most like human presenting. Like you can like really like, there's a lot of like, oh, they look like us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like you can like project a lot onto that. Or like get a lot from that too.
I agree. I can see that. I'm like, I feel like I missed the whole vampire phase. Like I was going to watch Twilight just for this episode. But
have you never seen it?
But I've never seen
Daniel!
Twilight. I'm so sorry.
Oh my
God. I'm here as the audience, like surrogate. Like I'm here to learn. I'm here to listen. But yeah, I've never seen Twilight or any of that. I've seen like Hotel Transylvania 1. And I've seen like...
One.
Yeah. And I like passively watched like What We Do in the Shadows, the movie. And I've seen like a couple of the TV episodes. But other than that, I really don't have any. I feel like the vampire phenomenon completely like passed me by. So I never really like,
honestly,
got
lucky.
It. Yeah. Actually, I mean, I feel like I watched Wizards of Waverly Place growing up and there was like a vampire.
True.
It was a vampire and there was a werewolf.
Yeah, there's a vampire and a werewolf.
Who was the vampire? I can't remember.
I think the vampire
was
like
dating the older brother.
Yeah, it was like Bridget Mendler from Good
it
Luck
was
Charlie.
Yes.
She played the vampire. Yeah, that's like
she was besties with the werewolf actually.
Okay.
And made the siblings jealous because they were so close as vampire and werewolf. I'm sorry, this is not important. I'm just remembering the plot of Wizards. From What We Do in the Shadows, did you have like a favorite vampire trope? Because the show kind of has like the archetype of vampires throughout the years. There was like the scary Nosferatu like in coffin one that has like the scary teeth, and then there was like kind of the sexy cabaret like greasy guy, and then there was just the modern vampire. Just a guy.
I don't remember a lot from the show, and I might be mixing up the show and the movie, but who is the one that like you first see them like sleeping, but they're like kind of like levitating just in like the corner?
Peter.
Peter. I liked Peter. But to be honest, it was a fairy like not in my full like conscious mind while I was watching it. I was kind of like, these are shapes moving on the screen.
That's fair.
Yeah. It was good, I think.
It was like when Daniel watched Y Tu Mamá También, and it was like, oh, she dies at the end?
Oh.
Like, if I'm not, when I'm watching a movie, I don't know. I gotta be, like, fully, yeah.
Like, in it.
I gotta be fully in it, or else I will miss, like, very significant plot points and character beats.
That's
but
fair.
I liked it. pretty colors. I liked the dialogue. It was a movie.
Mama también,
it was a movie.
All of it. Yeah, I loved that it was a movie. Like a movie. Yeah, it felt like a movie that I was watching. I liked it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's a good point, though, that you made about What We Do in the Shadows. Like, it does have all the tropes. I didn't even realize that. It has, like, the Nosferatu one, and then, like, the, like, throughout history ones, and then, yeah, like, Nick's just, like, this guy.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I love Nosferatu vampire. I love how he interacts with the rest of them. They're just like, hey, and he just doesn't, like, move or emote. And then he dies. R.I.P. That sucks.
Do you two have, like, favorite pieces of vampire media that you think, like, define the landscape of vampire media? Maybe those are two different things, but, like, in terms of all the vampire content, what, like, stands tall above the rest or is, like, the most defining?
This is such a good question.
Because, like, if a vampire novice were to, like, get into vampires, I feel like the obvious answer is Twilight, but, like, is there...
But Twilight sucks.
Yeah, Twilight does suck. Besides the first movie, I'll stand by that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
We both, Dora and I put our fingers in the air to emphasize.
For those, those not in the studio, both of their fingers
the
raised.
Fingers went up.
Yeah.
It's facts. I would say True Blood is, I think, the first thing that I was like, oh, like, I love this, like, trope. Or I love, like, seeing this play out.
Okay.
Like, the show is really bad after season three, but, like, I remember being, like, it's just, like, fun seeing this in this setting. And it's, like, vampires are, like, out and about. And, like, we're talking about it. And, like, they're their powers. And, like, we're learning all about it. Like, I don't know. The, like, world building in it was interesting. But, like, especially because it was playing on, like, yeah, these, like, modern fantasy realities and, like, these tropes that existed already.
So is it set in, like, a contemporary, like, modern-day setting? Okay.
It's in 2008 in Louisiana.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never seen True Blood, and I don't know if this show is my favorite vampire content, but I do like, I liked in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which is an anime, I just like that it's, like, so, like, not important that they're vampires, but they are. Like, Dio is a vampire. He's, like, the big villain, and, like, his spawn, he, like, is the villain for generations and generations. Like, every new generation of the show, there's a new JoJo, and... But he lives on, and he's a vampire. But it's like, they acknowledge it for 2 seconds, and then it's just like, oh, he's just this powerful, eternal guy.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. It's like, cool when it's used as a tool, just kind of in the background. But it's not like, this is a vampire thing, you know?
Yeah, I feel like most of my impression of vampires, other than What We Do in the Shadows, and I feel like this is probably largely informed by just like, what I know about Twilight and what... like friends have said about Twilight, but I feel like vampires always seem a little bit like provocative or a little like sexual in some way. Is there like anything there, or am I like wrong, like in your view of vampires?
You're like they're always more right.
I'm more right. Okay.
So,
awesome.
It's like, okay, like, yeah, I've been thinking about this so much just because I've been thinking about this episode, and so much of vampire stuff is like queerness and like campiness. Mm-hmm. And I was watching all these videos before this, and like there was this one video that was like vampire expert talks about vampires in movies. It's really interesting. But they were like, yeah, part of like vampire stuff is like it's non-normative, like they're a non-normative human. So like a lot of what's like attractive about them is like that they're like is like non-normative sexuality or like non-normative behaviors, and like that's what draws the people in.
Oh.
And, like, also, like, vampires in general, like, sucking someone's blood is, like, so weirdly intimate and, like, hot. Like, it's, like, kisses, like, it's, like, so, but it's like, kisses with teeth, I guess. Like, it's, like, so, you have to get, like, in there.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Yeah. And, like, just the way that, like, characters, like, bodies move and, like, just the whole experience of it all is very erotic and, like, kind of only acceptable in that context. Like, I feel like the rating for, like, vampire movies is, like, lower than it should be, probably on average. Like, I think in any other movie, if there was, like, I don't know, just scenes like that, it would be, like, 14A or something. But when it's vampires, we've just accepted that, like, oh, yeah, they just, you know,
that's
bite each other's necks and then, like, moan.
But,
and
like,
it's totally
why the
fine.
Neck? Like,
yeah, totally.
Why the neck,
because, I mean, the big jugular is there. And, again, it's just, yeah, it's, like... very
it's hot
set. Yeah, it's like why we wouldn't want to watch someone like bite someone's thigh and like
speak for yourself
that's true.
You
or like
blood.
Arm
yeah.
Or I guess wrist. In Twilight, they do a lot of wrist action.
Oh, okay. Ooh, that's kind of yucky.
That is so gross.
Yeah, it is really gross. Exactly. Would that be as
okay, yeah, the neck is definitely like a hotter place to bite somebody than the wrist or thigh.
in a video I watched this.
I get it.
It's like, what's the least sexy place to bite someone?
Yeah.
Beyond a video I watched, one of the like vampire experts said that vampirism is just sex from the neck up. And I'm like, true.
I see it.
So true, bestie.
So true, facts.
So true. That, your comment about like the non-normative like sexuality and behavior also really reminds me of like Bones and All, if you've seen that movie. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't, but no? I really, really want to.
Okay, it was, so I feel like, we've talked about Bones and All a lot, probably on this show, but it's like Taylor Russell and Timothy Chalamet.
Directed by Luca.
Directed by Luca, and one thing about Luca Guadagnino, like his characters will be like queer or queer-coded in some way, and I feel like, I mean, instantly, a lot of the, I don't know, I don't even, this is definitely the wrong word, but a lot of the, like, cannibalistic foreplay, if that makes sense, so, like, when they're, like, leading up to, like, eating somebody, it also seems, like, very, like, erotic and very sexual, and then I also feel like there's a lot of that, like, queerness between the cannibals where they kind of like seek each other out and they can like tell who else is a cannibal and they form this kind of like community that lives on like the borders of like what's normal or outside the borders or whatever, and they just dress like really gay too. But yeah, I feel like Bones and All kind of had that vibe, so I can definitely see like vampires having that as well, so maybe that's kind of like a theme that comes up in a lot of like monster slash human monster content. I don't know.
Yeah, and I do think Bones and All is the closest thing I've seen to kind of the vampire phenomenon in terms of like how you not necessarily root for the characters, but you kind of do, and it's like, you know, they have to. Like, in Bones and All, like, it's, like, an innate urge in them. Like, they can't not be cannibals. And they do meet a character who does it by choice. And they're all like, what? Like, you're a freak.
Yeah.
Like, and everyone's, like, really off-put by this one normal human guy who just, like,
loves
is into
eating
it.
People. Yeah.
And, yeah, they're beautiful. And, like, I don't know. You're just like, oh, beautiful humans. I guess you gotta eat the grandma.
Yeah.
I guess it's fine.
It's okay, because they're good looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That all makes sense.
That all makes sense. Sorry, I thought you were like itching to say something.
No, it just makes me think of like how like what vampires represent, I guess, and like how that arc has been. And like it's starting with just like fear of death in general, and then like fear of illness specifically, and like it being tied to tuberculosis and stuff.
Oh.
And then like that, as that kind of fear and like illness in general kind of like dampened, I guess, then it was like xenophobia, and then like as that had kind of morphed, like now it's more like queerness and stuff, and like how depictions of vampires have changed to like match and like meet those fears. And I think like cannibalism is like, it's on the way,
because
like
next.
It's like it's tied to zombies to me, I guess, and like zombies and cannibals, I feel like both used to be more, I don't know, seen as like as like illness or something, or like as like I don't know, like an association with disease. But now it's like, ooh, like, wait, they can be hot too? Like, what else, like, are the ways that, like, we can, like, apply it or whatever?
Yeah, I definitely get the zombies thing with, like, illness, because I had recently watched, like, The Last of Us. I don't know if either of you have seen that. But it was very, like, while I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is literally, like, COVID.
Totally,
like, the zombies
totally.
Are just people with COVID, but they, like, eat people and give other people COVID or whatever. So I could definitely, so I don't know.
Whatever.
Or whatever. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting how, like, monsters and, like, supernatural creatures, kind of like you were saying, Dora, kind of seem as like stand-ins for different like things or like social climates that are going on like throughout time, whether it's like queerness or it's like different pandemics or like tuberculosis, as you said.
Totally.
I just think that's interesting how they're very like socially driven, So I don't know. I do wonder if there's like some content that's just like, haha, vampires dumb and funny, which I guess is like what we do in the shadows. And Hotel Transylvania.
But, totally. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's also, it makes sense to me that Luca would make a movie about cannibals to talk about like queerness and also illness, I guess. Because it's like, vampires are so campy. Like, at this point, like, vampires are so lame. Like, it's hard to do, like, it's hard to, like, take them seriously.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of, like, the most recent vampire thing that I've seen was What We Do in the Shadows. Like, what else has kind of come out since then?
That's true.
That wasn't corny.
I really can't think of anything that was, like, a serious vampire movie.
And there's, like, a new vampire movie coming out that is also silly with, like, Nicolas Cage. Like, Renfield,
which is, like,
I think that's called camp.
Like, Nicolas Cage, everything he touches is, like, goof. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw a lot of things about Bones and All being, like, a big metaphor for addiction. Like, a lot of people took it that way as well, which also kind of fits into, you know, these monsters just, like, being a representation of, like, social anxiety or things that are like not considered social norms.
Yeah.
They used to call tuberculosis the consumption because they're like, you look like you're being eaten alive from the inside.
Did not know that.
Which is also very vampiric, which is cool. I think we should take a quick break.
Let's do it.
Then we'll be back talking more about monsters and vampires and media.
Yerba mate. Yerba mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a yerba mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which includes stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of yerba mate. Visit guayaquil.com, G-U-A-Y-A-K-I.com, to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR Station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
This is a message from Ars Scientia, a research cluster here at UBC. Ars Scientia is a partnership between the Stuart Plusson Quantum Matter Institute, the Department of Physics and Astronomy, and the Morris and Helen Belkin Art Gallery. Ars Scientia brings together artists and scientists to foster new methods of knowledge exchange that cross the boundaries of art, science, and pedagogy. This spring, Ars Scientia is hosting Artist Talks with our current cohort of artists in residence. These talks, hosted at the Plusson QMI, will feature three artists who are currently working closely with the QMI, Physics and Astronomy, and Belkin to create sculptural, graphic, and written works. You can stop by to catch our first talk, which will be happening Tuesday, February 21st at 2 p.m. in room 311 at the Quantum Matter Institute. It'll be hosted by J.G. Mayer, who is a Vancouver-based multidisciplinary artist and media designer who specializes in mixed media, web, and audio. Mayer has been working in the areas of both traditional and digital contemporary art and is a sound designer for various game studios who develop titles for publishers such as Apple, Electronic Arts, Microsoft, and Netflix. As part of his talk, Mayer will present one of his major works called Chroma Chamber, a web-based new media art installation that investigates human expectations of vision and machine algorithms by programmatically collating real-time Google image results to surround the viewer with distilled color of the words they speak. You won't want to miss out on this experience at the intersection of both art and science. And stay tuned for our next two talks, which will be happening on March and April.
I need you before we are numb to
Hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Fan Club with Isia and Daniel.
Hello.
And special guest Dora Duber. Hello. And we are talking about vampires and media.
Yeah.
And during the break, I was wondering why we think it is so vital that vampires are like so anonymous in so many stories. Why do you think that's such a dominant trope? And what do you think the consequences of like vampire visibility? What do you think those would be, I guess? What's the danger with that, you know?
I mean, something that just popped into my mind, and I don't even know if this answers your question at all, but I feel like I feel like there's so much like linkage, that's not a word, but so many things linked with like vampires and like satanic panic and like things that are just like devilish and wrong and like we don't talk about. And I feel like it's interesting that vampires are also linked with like queerness and like illnesses and like other things that are like a little like non-normative in society. So I don't know if that answered your question at all, but that was one thing that popped into my mind just now.
Well, that makes sense to me, like, because I was thinking about like how I feel like a lot of it is like there's like, well, we need to be silent so we can like continue to exploit people. Like, I feel like that's really tied to the fear of it, or like to continue like feeding on people or whatever, consuming people.
True.
And like, yeah, like when vampires were first like coming up, like at the beginning of like myth and like lore and stuff, like it was like, well, like it could be anyone because they are like consuming us, or like it's like a subversive attack.
Yeah.
Which like I think also makes like lends vampires to like being adapted and like misconstrued and like represented to all these like other social anxieties, like in media forms and stuff. But also interesting, great question, Isia. Because have you ever seen True Blood?
No, I've just seen like clips and I know some of the characters.
Because like the whole point of that show is like they like it's like vampires come out of the coffin and then they're like trying to like live with humans and like they're like able to do it because like they've developed like a synthetic blood that they can like survive off of.
Oh.
But that's where like there's a lot of like political tensions and stuff that like the main
conflict.
Yeah, or like the main I don't like... think. Or, like, the main, I guess, like, political agenda that they're comparing it to is queerness. And it's, like, there's a lot of, like, really, really clear links to, like, vampires. I mean, they keep calling it coming out of the coffin. So, like, that's a really obvious one.
And there are, like, some of the first, like, big queer characters on television.
Totally.
I forgot their name. But
Lafayette?
Yeah, Lafayette.
Yeah.
Was, like, a pretty revolutionary TV character.
Yeah,
especially
totally.
Especially in this time. One thing I started thinking about, because we're talking about anonymity and you mentioned how you want to talk about wealth as well, is Dora and I watched this movie, Queen of the Damned, which is quite bad but iconic, starring Aaliyah, like one of her last things she did before she passed. And the main character in that movie is a vampire in a band, and he wants to be public. Like, he goes public about being a vampire, and all the other vampires are like, how dare you? And it's a whole thing. But he, you know, he's told everyone, I'm a vampire, and he's this, like, rich, wealthy guy, and he basically gets, like, two women delivered to him, like, when he needs to feed, and he feeds on them, and, like, he's technically being very, like, transparent. He's like, I'm a vampire.
Yeah.
But, like, he still gets away with everything, and, like, people still love him because he is just this, like, wealthy, powerful person, and, like, wealthy, powerful people get away with things. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
It's like the connection between vampires and wealth.
I feel like that, I can't remember if it was the video that you linked about like vampires and media, but it was like Carlisle Cullen is like the most wealthy character ever written.
Who's that?
He's like the dad in Twilight.
Oh.
He's like $56 billion or something. Like,
what? Oh, wow. I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, like something obscene. And like, I feel like they're like, also in like True Blood, but then also like Dracula, he's like a count. And like I started watching this really, really bad movie called The Vampire Happening in 1976, because I wanted to watch a movie from each like the 70s, 90s, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. It does not really matter. But like the character in that movie, like, she, like, goes back to, like, her, like, uncle's castle or whatever, and, like, vampires are abound, I guess. But, like, this thing of, like, people over time, like, either having accrued or, like, yeah, anonymously and, like, subtly, like, gathering and, like, hoarding all this wealth and resources and stuff, and, like, that making them... In True Blood, it's like, wow, isn't that great? Like, all the vampires are so rich. Like, that's so weird. But then, like, in other kind of telling, and I guess also in Twilight, but other kind of tellings of it, like, it being, like, a symbol of their, like, ability to exploit and their, like, ability to, like, yeah, like, pursue and, like, either, yeah, like, in the example of Queen of the Damned, like, bring people to them and, like, be seductive in a way or, like...
Mm-hmm. With no consequences,
yeah, basically. Totally. But then also, like, having access to, like, the Cullens just, like, have a hospital in their house. You know what I mean? Like, having access to all these things.
Yeah. And the Cullens, yeah, in that video, she said that the Cullens are, like, the most aspirational family. Because they're not only, they're not, like, you know, old-timey, like, mwahaha vampires in, like, a castle and there's bats. Like, they live in, like, a beautiful modern home in, like, the forest. And, I don't know, all their kid, like, Edward, you know, reads and plays piano and, like, Carlisle's a doctor and he's really charming and he's like altruistic in a way, and like they're just the most perfect, like, modern, just like fantasy of like any person ever.
And from the side of the vampires, is it seen as like a empowerment like thing, like, oh, this disenfranchised group of people is now like super rich? Or is it very clearly like, oh, vampires bad, like taking, like, exploiting people? Or is it framed as, like, a, I don't know.
It's, like a fun consequence. It's, like, oh, awesome. Yeah. And also, they've been around forever and, like, have a ton of money.
Yeah.
I guess literally old money.
Literally, yeah. Old money. Like, in the notes, yeah. I wrote intergenerational wealth, because it's, like, it's just the same family.
And even in Twilight, it's, like, what's his name? I can't remember if it's Jasper or Casper. I think it's Jasper. But he was, like, he was a Confederate soldier. Like, they just throw that in there. They're, like, after the Confederate War. It's, like, what? It never comes up again.
Stephanie Meyer literally went through lists of Confederate soldiers who died. Like, she was like, this guy is going to be from the South and he's going to be a Confederate soldier. Like,
and he wasn't even Southern.
No.
Like, the guy in the movie.
There's a whole video about that on YouTube. Everyone should watch it.
There's so many Confederate.
Yeah, because it's also in True Blood.
So yeah.
And what makes Twilight 1, like, the best one? I was going to ask.
I think that's less...
It was inspired by a dream. I feel like that's all anyone needs.
The director was different.
Yeah.
They also didn't know it was going to turn into, like, this massive thing. Yeah. There's a lot of factors.
The movie is bizarre. Like, it's really... shot like a, like, experimental student film.
Oh, wow.
It's green.
Yeah, the whole thing is green.
And then, like a green, like, color grading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they, like, as soon as it was successful, they were like, get out of here.
They fired,
like,
the director.
Like, normie director, come on in.
They replaced, what's her name, the ginger... What's up with that? The actress who played...
Oh, with Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah.
And what makes the successive films so terrible?
They're just...
I would say because the first one is, like, it's so campy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's, like, it's a silly book. It's a silly story. And, like, if you watch the special features for that movie, like, Catherine Hardwicke, the director, is taking it so seriously. She's like, this is art. But it's, like, at the end of the day, like, this is very goofy.
Yeah.
And, like... That's awesome. But then afterward, the other, like, subsequent films are like, we're going to make money and we're going to take this seriously. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And I don't know. I personally just do not care for Jacob at all. And I'm not invested in that whole, like, love triangle thing. And there's, like, a movie. There's a whole movie of basically Edward being like, I can't be with you. I'm too dangerous. And then she just, like, is depressed for an entire movie because he's gone and, like... tries to get his attention through doing danger. It's just so boring to me. I'm like, this is so boring.
There's what, 5 movies?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Last, like, 2 are pretty epic because they're so ridiculous, like, extra ridiculous.
Yeah, I feel like the last 2, because it's, like, the last book, like, split into 2, and they were like, A, we need to make this last, like, we need to make as much money as possible.
Yeah.
So, like, they, like, add a bunch of, like, there's a whole scene, like, this, like, fight scene that's, like, was fake.
Like, it was all just a dream.
Yeah, it was like literally, like, they dedicate like 10 minutes and it's like, just kidding, that didn't even happen. Like, it's like,
oh, wow,
what?
There's,
like,
embellishments.
Totally. Yeah. But I feel like they kind of got, like, because also I feel like, yeah, a whole episode on Twilight would be like a whole thing, but, like, like Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart broke up in that time. Like they also like kind of came out as like hating Twilight. Like by the last two movies, everyone was like, let's just bang this out, guys. Yeah. And like they're like the actors kind of were like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like that kind of comes
like
through.
Not what
it.
They signed up for.
They were just like, what are we doing here? Everybody, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of, I feel like that bleeds in and it makes it more fun.
Twilight is wild.
And do you think any, like, have either of you read the books? Like, is any of the...
I did not read those big books.
You read the book? And are do the books maintain, like quality?
I read them, like, when I was, like,
12. Okay, your 12-year-old self, like, in that critical lens. Did that. Okay, so it was good to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was like, ooh, I love this.
But
love.
Love.
But then, like, you revisit and you're like, oh, my gosh, like, this relationship is toxic. Like, everything about it
is, 100.
I know, and she's 17.
She's 5'9 and 110 pounds. That's what
that's what Stephanie Meyer's put in the book. Like, she gave a generation of girls eating disorders with that one line.
Oh, wow.
Probably.
Yeah. It doesn't sound very unproblematic then. No. So do you think...
Oh, no, it's like probably one of the most problematic series of all time.
Wow.
I would say. Because like she's also sold as the most relatable girl ever. You know what I mean?
It's because she has brown
hair. Totally. She has brown hair and, like, she reads. You know what I mean?
Every girl I know, brown hair and is a reader. So
is literate. Yeah. Like, can read.
Can read. Okay. Another thing that, like, came into mind when you guys were talking about, like, Twilight and vampires and then just people living on, like, the outskirts was, like, weirdly X-Men. Maybe as, like, a kid, that was my version of Twilight. I don't know. But I watched, like, the X-Men movies. And I feel like them, I mean, I feel like at the time I didn't, like, pick up on that at all. But, like, them being, like, mutants that...
And trying to, like, unmutant them. That whole movie where they're trying to, they found a, like, mutant vaccine. And they're trying to, like, get rid of their mutant powers.
And then I think they go in the other direction in another movie where they try to, like, give other people mutant powers. Or, like, give the military mutant powers or something.
Well, this is so interesting because in one of the other videos that I watched... Or no, I think it was this video. No, it was another one. It doesn't really matter. But it was about, like, vampires... Yeah, vampire... Whatever. Vampires and media. Doesn't matter. What I was going to say is they talk about Morbius, which is hilarious. Like, they actually, like, seriously dedicate a part of this video to Morbius.
Oh, my gosh.
But
best movie ever made. Yeah, Morbin time.
But they were, like, this, like, as, like, vampires, like, become more and more, like, as they morph and, like, adapt to, like, the fears of the time, whatever, like, Morbius is about, like, fear of technology and, like, technology, like, curing and, like, the consequences of, like, tech and, like, biotech and stuff.
Like, the film is about that?
I don't know. That's what they said. The vampire. That was like the vampire part, like the vampire element of Morbius. Like, what it's commenting on is like the kind of widespread fear or like anxieties around the integration of technology into our lives and like whether it like enhances or limits us and stuff. But like it's very like mutant to me. Like, it's very like what are we scared of right now? Oh, we're scared of like. Our bodies being affected by, like, the things around us.
And X-Men was very, like, explicitly political with that.
Totally.
Like, one of the characters was the kid of a politician who was a mutant, and they were going to give him the vaccine as, like, a big, like, statement or whatever, and he refused to do it, and it was a whole moment because they're like, you're, like, our, you know? Like, that was, like, the theme of the whole movie. And as a kid, I was definitely rooting for the mutants. And there was a big war. And then there was, you know, the mutant that was too radical. She was like, kill them all.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a mutant who was, like, more centrist. It was just a big...
Which X-Men was this? Because I'm also realizing I've only seen, like, First Class and
later. No, these are the, like, original ones.
Oh, okay.
When Professor X and they're all old.
Oh, okay.
Because First Class is, like, prequel.
Young.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The old ones were, like, very, very explicitly... And Professor, the metal guy was...
Magneto?
Magneto was, like, radical, pro-mutant guy. And Professor X was more like, we got to work with the normies, you know?
Yeah.
But what's interesting about that, too, I guess, like, going back to, like, living in the open and stuff, is, like, in the X-Men's, like, do they ever... In First Class, they, like, announce mutants are here, right? Because
that was, like, the discovery of them. Yeah. In First Class, yeah.
Right? So, but, like, I feel like... That also is, there's, like, a element of, like, sympathy for the like, non-normative body, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, how, like, the fear that comes with, like, the vulnerability of, like, exposing like that kind of group.
Being out as a mutant.
Totally.
Or walking as a mutant. Because there's like, because since a lot of my X-Men knowledge is based off like the newer ones, I feel like Jennifer Lawrence's character, like Mystique or whatever, was at least to me the clearest like stand-in for, oh, like I can be like out as a mutant, or I can like live as a normal person because she can like shapeshift or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like that was an interesting little like theme that they had going on. But I don't know. Do you two think there are a like, or there is like a future monster or some kind of thing that like will have like social issues like placed on it, yeah, like canvassed on it or something? Or do you think we're gonna stick with like the current batch we have now of like vampires, cannibals?
I feel like X-Men. I mean, I think monsters have always been in some way like reflecting some social issue or topic.
Mm-hmm.
They really tried to make zombies humanized. I think that flopped with that one like Nicholas Holt movie. Like
warm bodies.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know if we're ever gonna get like more personalized zombie stories. And I read an interesting essay actually about zombies as like a villain and how they're so unique and like just how faceless and like
unique. Personality. Sorry, when you said unique, like the Beyonce alien superstar, like popped into my mind. Sorry,
continue. That's okay.
That was a little intrusive thought for all our listeners. Continue. Sorry.
That's all good. But I think everyone has a potential to, you know, all the monsters have potential. Yeah. I think cannibals, we're going to have more and more cannibal stuff, though.
I agree. Personally. I also think, yeah, I do think that there will be more like tech-based, like almost like Terminator or cyborg.
Yeah, true. Especially with like AI.
Yeah, because I feel like even like going back to like how monsters kind of like monsters and myth are like fear of unknown, and like there was the fear of like it could be anyone. Like I feel like that was a big part of it, especially with like things with like with vampires focusing on like shapeshifters and vampires and like these humanoid changing kind of creatures. I feel like now it's like those fears are becoming more like how like innocent people being transformed.
Yeah.
In some way. Like, I feel like that's going to be the, like, the transformation is the fear versus the, like, the killing or whatever.
I also wonder if, like, as society's fears change, or, like, as what, like, society's uncomfortable about changes, then, like, the monsters will also change. Because, like, as you, I don't know, I feel like as we were talking about, like, vampires or monsters being kind of, like, a symbol or stand-in for, like, queer people, and maybe now as that's becoming a bit more like normalized and accepted in society, and now the big thing, or at least the biggest, most recent phenomenon was like The Last of Us, and that was very tied to like a like they called it like a pandemic or like a virus and like stuff like that. So I wonder like if as like time changes and like different fears change, whatever the big like fear or whatever the big like hot button issue is at the time, that's what's reflected in like monster media or whatever.
Yeah. I also, yeah, I think, I have no idea what I was going to say.
That's
but
okay.
I did have a different thought, which was just like kind of going back to the wealth thing too. It's gone. I lost it.
I'll play some ads and then you can try and recall that thought you had.
Great transition.
World. But instead, you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
This is a journey into sound.
Gotta have house music. Hi, this is DJ Wah, inviting you to join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. here on 101.9 CITR for Techno Progressivo.
This is the house that funk built. This is the house that funk built.
Techno Progressivo is the only radio show in Vancouver where you'll hear the best mix of new tech house, techno, and progressive house.
A body bang. A
So join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. for Techno Progressivo.
Hello, hello. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Fan Club with Icia Daniel and special guest Dora. And we're talking about vampires. And Dora, you had some knowledge you wanted to bestow upon the people.
Bestow it.
Thank you. Thank you for this platform. I just wanted to like touch on, I guess, before we ended the show of like, we've talked about it so much in throughout the episode, but like how depictions and like the role, I guess, that vampires have played in media, like, and in like our commentary on fears and stuff, like how that kind of representation, as that morphs, it like, it's like adapting to kind of what we need at the time or like what we're trying to get at. And the first example of like a vampire being like a sympathetic character and like being a protagonist was Dark Shadows, which is a show that ran from 1966 to 1971, which I felt kind of silly because I thought that was a movie.
They made a movie remake
with the evil
who
guy.
Shall not
yeah
be
made. Yeah. But like how like I feel like that was a moment in like vampire media where like you can't go back. Like once there was a sympathetic like evil or like that kind of like those fears were kind of like given a like what the vampire represents and like those fears were given a sympathetic side, like it can't be like it will never be able to be like a fully evil person. So I think that it's kind of like there has to be a new monster, whether it's like cannibals or whatever. Like what the vampire does now is it speaks more explicitly about queerness and it speaks more explicitly about like these things and like conflict, internal conflict, but it like kind of can't really, it can't like represent anything nameless anymore.
Yeah. I feel like that sympathy and affliction that you're talking about, like it being seen as like a burden or a curse, is kind of what makes like these monsters somewhat like sympathetic or likable.
Totally.
Cause even like in Bones and All, like the main characters see it as something they're like afflicted with and like wish they could get rid of it. And like because of it, all their relationships are ruined and they can't live like normal lives. And they do have this like part of the movie when they do try to attempt to just live like normally and without like cannibalism, but they can't like fight that like desire of this like illness that they've been afflicted with. So I feel like it's pretty interesting how they flipped that to try and make it sympathetic in some way.
Yeah
And I think it's obviously very compelling as a writer and for an audience to have sympathetic villains, like even if it was like an evil vampire that you can also relate to or like understand where they're coming from. But I kind of do appreciate like just a big bad,
it's
like,
just bad for no reason.
Yeah, just like we watched Pan's Labyrinth recently, Dora and I, and the villain in that movie, he's just evil. Like, he's an evil guy. He's a fascist. Like, there's, like, everything about him is just evil. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes that's a good force to have in a movie, in a plot, to just have, like, evil villain. Because also a lot of people who try to make sympathetic villains, sometimes they're just kind of right. I'm like, are they even a villain?
Totally.
I don't know.
That's why
Marvel.
I really like Luca, like that Disney, this is like not relevant at all, but that's why I really like Luca, like the Disney movie about like the two boys and one of them's a fish, because the villain in that movie, like Ercole or Cole or whatever, like he's just like mean, like he's just a jerk and he just is like mean because he's like 15 and he thinks those two boys are like stupid. And I love that that's, like, his only motivation in the movie, and he's just, like, evil for being evil. Same with, like, Dr. Doofenshmirtz, Phineas and Ferb. This is moving away from vampires,
but,
like,
fully evil villain.
Yeah.
Zombies. They don't even need a motive.
Yeah.
They don't even need one. They're just brain dead. I eat.
Villains deserve to think less and just be evil. They can be fun too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that brings us to the end of our episode. So conclusion is we want more big bads.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe not, but.
And more hot monsters.
Yeah, we deserve it.
Yeah, yeah,
more sexy cannibals. Because that'd be fun.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
But yeah, this was Fan Club. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. Up next, I believe we have Alex's show, Chopped and Screwed. And then later, Dora's going on air for their last. Is this your last episode? Last episode of Teachable Moments ever.
The teachable moment that you won't want to miss.
Yeah, it'll be the teachable moment at 4 p.m. Yes. Yeah. So make sure you come back and listen to that. This was Fan Club. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.